But I wonder if you think that that might be a little bit instructive when we think about how disappointing the season was for the Raptors a season ago, playing all their home games in Tampa. Just the bringing of everything back to the building that they know, how impactful that could actually be, and whether the Blue Jays provide a template for that.
I think it's huge. I remember early last season, there was a really unfortunate game where the Raptors getting, you know, washed by the Celtics. And the home fans in Tampa started chanting, "We want Taco," which is kind of like the Raptors or the Celtics equivalent of "We want Bruno," for you know, of having essentially a player who doesn't regularly play, but a huge fan favorite, only comes in, you know, human victory cigars kind of thing. Like, yeah, I think there will be a lot less of that, which will be great. And I honestly think the bigger, you know, and this is sort of knock on wood, but the bigger factor would be, you know, if all the players are vaccinated and all the players and, you know, the arenas are, you know, obviously taken care of and things like that. Like, hopefully there just won't be a huge outbreak of COVID on the team this year, because that's what really, really killed the Raptors last year, is just that they had this big climb to get back to, you know, the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference, which sounds better than 17-17, but still, you know, the fourth seed is the fourth seed. And then, you know, basically like half the team got COVID, including all the, you know, important players outside of Kyle and Norm. You know, that tanked the season. So hopefully, you know, coming back to Toronto, I think will be huge. I think it would be great if they could have, you know, that same type of bounce that the Jays are getting. I think the energy of the city is very electric, especially around the Raptors and the Jays, especially when they're good. The energy is great. I don't know about the Leafs, but in any case, yeah, hopefully it'll turn things around, because I don't think anyone wants to see a repeat of what happened last year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Will in the sense that, like, displacement's a real thing. Like, it's a real thing when it comes to, you know, mental health and just sort of how you handle being away from your home. And even if these guys aren't from Toronto, which obviously most of them are not, trust me, if you've ever lived in a hotel or some kind of residential housing for a long time, like, it's not easy. It's a bit of a strain when you're displaced from where your roots are or what your expectation is. So I think that alone probably is worth a couple of wins. We'll see ultimately what that means. Well, I want to ask you two things sort of league-wide, and then Ben can certainly go back to the Raptors. But, you know, two of the things that have come down this week in terms of the NBA are, one, a midseason tournament, which will be incentivized by giving players, I assume, money to either play slash win. And the other one, and this was really interesting to me, Board of Governors is voting this week on the making the coaches challenge the lone method to review out of bounds calls under 2 minutes. And the reason they're doing that, of course, is because the NBA wants the games to be sped up faster. I'm sure it's not really great for television, but what are your thoughts on those two things, midseason tournament and the fact that the only way maybe to get a call change now in the final 2 minutes will be if a coach using a coach's challenge, which means I think all the coaches are going to hold their challenges until the end of games.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's start with the coaching challenge. I think that's great. I think it's anything that changes the game in a tactical sense, I think is really cool. Like, I think we should be keeping stats on, like, which coaches are great at, you know, challenges. Of course, it's not just up to the head coach. Basically, I think every team in the NBA now has one of the assistants in the back, because there's, like, 15 assistants per team. They'll just have somebody constantly with an iPad that's, like, watching it live with, like, a rewind 15 seconds button. And it's their job, essentially, to... you know, tell the coach, because, you know, they're the only one that has that ability. But I think that's really cool. I also think that, like, look, we all know that the NBA, one of the main annoyances that most fans have with watching the game is just, like, how many reviews and stoppages happen at the end of a game. The last 2 minutes of the NBA game probably takes, like, 15 minutes in actual real time. And, of course, it's very important to get the calls right. And I'm sure people will complain, you know. There's going to be some time this year where a coach uses their challenge in the last 2 minutes and then the refs miss another call and they can't go back and they'll complain. You know, the NBA is constantly tweaking these things, but I think this is a good idea. It makes a lot of sense. And, you know, again, it fits in a competitive tactical sense. So I think that makes, that's a really good change, and hopefully that'll go through. And then I guess the other thing with the in-season tournament is I'm curious to see how that's going to be received by both players and fans, because I think the NBA is looking at Champions League, you know, with European soccer, that, you know, that is something that is wildly successful, arguably more successful than some of the actual leagues themselves. And that's a cool idea. But at the same time, one of the key things with Champions League is that you're getting teams from different countries that are competing in their, you know, domestic league that don't usually get to play, you know, like Barcelona wouldn't normally play Liverpool, and obviously in their club setting. But in a Champions League setting, you get those exclusive matchups that makes it really cool. And that's where the NBA is lacking, obviously. It's like you're not seeing any exclusive matchups. It's not like you're seeing the Raptors play the Celtics. We know the Raptors play the Celtics. You'll see them play it in different contexts. So I'm curious to see how that goes. But look, the NBA is trying constantly to improve the game, which is nice. And, you know, honestly, for a lot of these players, like $1 million per player in prize pool money is not bad. No. If you really consider it. Like that's
no, $1 million bucks isn't bad. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as much as like LeBron probably be like, all right, this doesn't really move me. But for like 50% of the NBA, that's not bad. So,
no, I'm with you. And it would be, the first year of the thing would be difficult to wrap your head around its import. But that's the whole point, is that you would get a couple of years and see if the players care. And if $1 million bucks moves them and you know it's important to them, it's going to be important to you. But it's going to take some time, I think. Talking to Will, Lou. All right, so this Raptors team, I put myself in a position where I was hopeful that they were going to select Scotty Barnes. I think I'm one of the few, although everybody's moved to that point now, I would think. And not to say that Jalen Suggs is going to be a bust in Orlando, but everything you read about the potential of Scotty Barnes and his switchability on defense and the potential for offensive improvement, it's the potential of him is incredible. Where are you on your expectations, though, in year one for Scotty Barnes and right out of the gate without perhaps Pascal Siakam for a month?
I mean, it's interesting. If I were Nick Nurse, I'd be, you know, thinking about this question heading into training camp, among many others, is sort of, you know, who do you start at that power forward position? I think there's a really good case to be made for Chris Boucher. He has been very productive. Obviously, last year is a really big part of the team. Probably the only consistent bench player, which actually might be an argument in favor of putting him on the bench again, if he is so productive in that sort of six-man type role. But yeah, with Scotty, I think it's very exciting. I think, you know, in summer league, you got to see, you know, a lot of good and bad as you do in summer league. There's some things that are shaky. Like, I think the jumper is going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And that's to be expected. But there are some just real freakish type skills that he has that gets you really excited. And look, I don't want to be, you know, coming on here and giving propaganda about a player over, you know, these summer league runs that they do in whatever courts. But I mean, he's in there playing with NBA players, and he's locking up guys like, you know, Donovan Mitchell. And the rare glances that we see, there's a video of him locking Tim Hardaway Jr., who got him with a crossover. You know, Scotty was actually, you know, taking a step back. Then he did a step back, and he still blocked the jumper, which is just super rare to see. But it makes sense, because when you see him, like, he already has, you know, a man's body, you know, especially like an NBA-ready body. He seems to have a great attitude, and he just seems to have a pretty good sense of how to play. So, I mean, if Nick wants to put him in the starting lineup right away, it'd be really kind of ironic in a way, because that's kind of how Pascal started his career. If you remember in 2016, right, when he got drafted, nobody expected him, you know, to start. He was very raw, and he was very raw, but, you know, the Raptors, they had an injury, I think, to Jared Sullinger, and Pascal started for like 2 months. And, you know, there were obviously ups and downs with that, but he looked pretty promising. And I think Scotty could have maybe the same runway here, which would be really exciting. I think fans are really looking forward to him, just because I think he's already really gravitated towards the fan base. And I think the fan base have really embraced how open and loving and just in positive and enthusiastic the guy is. So it's a nice consolation after playing in Tampa to get Scotty.
Well, one of the things I think about the Raptors trying to figure out is what Dragic's usage will be, assuming he's around at the start, or, you know, assuming there's no deal, let's say, early in the year. You know, and that's a really interesting question, because obviously he's not part of the long-term future, but, you know, I think if you want to have a shot at making the playoffs, and whether it's that play-in game or a little bit higher seed, I think he's got to play a lot. At least that would be my take on the roster. What's your expectation with him, presuming that at least he's around for a little while?
Yeah, I think if he's around, I think he will be, just because I don't think he's going to, like, hold out and stuff like that. He's been a, like, consummate pro in the NBA. And, you know, this is year 13 for him. He's he's going to know the deal. Obviously, we know where he wants to go. He wants to go to Dallas to play with fellow Slovenian Luka Doncic. But, you know, he's a pro. And he's pretty good. That's the thing, too. Like, he is a pretty good player. Like, he would definitely be in the rotation. If we're just talking about strictly who are the best players on the team, he's definitely one of the top seven players. Especially for this Raptors team, early on in the season, without Pascal, depending on how much time he misses, you're going to need more shot creation. And I think, you know, that's where a guy like Dragic can really help you, whether that's on the off the bench. I guess he could potentially in the mix to start, because the Raptors have gone with two point guard lineups in the last 2 years with Kyle and Fred. But at the same time, you know, you just re-signed Gary. I think Gary should get a good shot there as well. So in any case, I mean, Goran's definitely good enough to be in the mix. He's still a very solid player. He's played and produced with the starting lineup or off the bench in Miami, and don't really see why he wouldn't here in Toronto as well. So obviously it's not like a long-term fit, and I think the Raptors probably, you know, will look to accommodate him and move him, especially because he's expiring. But he's a good player. He shoots well. He gets to the basket. He's a lefty. That's always very tricky to guard. And he's also a tough-minded guy. I'll say that much, because I think Raptor fans have seen a bit of the nasty side from Goran. He's definitely thrown an elbow here or there, or tripped OG, for example, previously. But probably a guy that you would like to have on your team doing some of that stuff.
Talking to Will Liu. So the Raptors got a little bit of criticism for their inactivity in the free agent market, but, you know, once bitten, twice shy, I think is the expression when it comes to free agent centers with Aaron Baines. What do you make of that position and where the Raptors at least start the season at the five?
Yeah, I think it's Kem's spot right now. And I think that I know maybe because his numbers in Orlando were so modest, and, you know, he was on draft and things like that, maybe there's skepticism, but I really do think he fit really well with the starting five last year. Clearly had a very good chemistry with Kyle, but I think there's almost been this, like, misconception that it was sort of some Kyle Lowry magic that made Kem Birch good. I don't think that's the case. Kem showed pretty good chemistry working with the Raptors' two point guards, Fred and Malachi. So I think that this spot, I think he's a little small, and, you know, against the bigger centers, the Raptors are going to have to double and help. The thing is, the Raptors double and help pretty much anybody. Anybody that's even half decent in the NBA, they will send double teams, they'll run zones, stuff like that. So I'm not too worried about that. And I think the other thing that's really intriguing to me this year is obviously Precious is cool too. You know, he showed a lot in summer league. But I actually really would like to see Scotty, OG, and Pascal play together in the front court with no center on the floor. And the reason for that is just because, you know, we've seen actual moderate success, not long-term success, because I think guys get banged up if they're undersized and they're always banging at centers. But OG and Pascal have both guarded centers really well. We've seen OG play Jokic really well, the league MVP. He's played him really well, like three or four times now in the last two seasons. And I kind of want to see more of that lineup. And the thing is, when you go small, you kind of need more size elsewhere to compensate for that. And that's where the Raptors didn't have a third guy who can play in the front court, who can give you size, who can guard other positions, who can be really effective as a weak side, you know, shot blocker or a defender or things like that. They just didn't have that third guy. Like, you know, with all due respect to Stanley Johnson or Yuta Watanabe or Rondé in the last couple of years, these guys just haven't really been two-way contributors in the way that Scotty can. And when you have those three forwards, then all of a sudden there really isn't that much of a size mismatch when you talk about in the front court. So I think the Raptors have options. I think Nick is always very creative with these things. And I'm definitely more positive about it now as compared to last year, which, you know, all due respect to Aaron Baines, he's apparently nursing an injury that's terrible to hear, but he just was not productive at all for the Raptors last year.